Support for Interlochen Public Radio is provided by you and by Comfort Keepers. For over 20 years, Comfort Keepers have been providing in-home care services and keeping seniors living independently in the comfort of their own home. Learn more at comfortkeepers.com.
A cold case murder that's been a mystery for nearly 40 years came to a close in a Grand Traverse County courtroom. This is the Up North Lowdown from Interlochen Public Radio. I'm Ed Ronco. Yesterday, a jury convicted 64-year-old Stephen Gary Kuhn of second-degree murder for the killing of Linda Mateer in 1989. Kuhn had initially been a suspect, but it took scientific advancements decades later to bring enough evidence for his arrest. Journalist Marty Link has been among those covering this for the Record Eagle, and she's with us to talk about how the case was solved. Hi, Marty.
Good morning, Ed.
Hey, so Marty, first, can you take us back to 1989? Who was Linda Mateer and what happened?
Sure. So Linda was a 41-year-old Traverse City woman, mother of five, and with a demeanor one of her best friends described to me as kind, outgoing, and happy-go-lucky. So back on April 20th, 1989, Linda and a friend went to a bar near Chum's Corners called Spike's Peak. Some of your listeners might know that bar as Northern Lights. That's how what I remember that place as. Linda disappeared after that, and her body was found about a week later by a mushroom hunter in Hoosier Valley. And just to place that geographically, that's a rural area in Grand Traverse County's Blair Township.
Okay, so not terribly far away. Police had looked at Stephen Kuhn as a suspect, the man convicted yesterday, but they couldn't arrest him at the time because they didn't have enough evidence. What was it that led them back to him all these years later?
Right. So at the time, witnesses had put Linda Mateer and Stephen Kuhn at the bar on the same night and at the same time. Officers took photos of the scene in Hoosier Valley. They took photos and forensic evidence from Kuhn's car, which was a brown Cadillac. They interviewed her friends and family, and they interviewed Kuhn several times, at least seven, which was brought out in testimony during the trial. They also had Michigan State Police, an analyst, work up a profile, and that was not allowed into evidence. The judge ruled that it was... it wouldn't be helpful to the jury, but that profile also pointed to Kuhn, but they didn't make an arrest and the case went cold.
Okay. And so that was in the early 1990s when that happened. And there's been some advancements in the decades since then in especially scientific evidence. And I gather that it was that, especially DNA, that finally brought back this case in front of authorities who made an arrest just last year.
Yes, right. And the rest was in February. And it was mitochondrial DNA, which is a little different than the nuclear DNA that we usually hear about. And the jury had a lot of scientific evidence to go through. I think maybe the main point, and this is what the prosecutor said she thought was most important, was that so mitochondrial DNA is inherited only from the maternal line. So mothers pass it to their sons and daughters, but daughters are the only ones that then pass it on, so on and so on. So there was a hair among the forensic evidence found in that Cadillac that to a high degree of certainty, 99.7%, eliminated that percentage of the population of Northern America, but did not eliminate Linda Mateer. So the prosecutor said that was a near certainty that she had been in his car. And that was key, she said later, in the conviction.
So they've got this scientific evidence in front of the jury. What did Stephen Kuhn's defense attorneys say during the trial? What was their counter argument here?
Yeah, so at the time of her death, Linda was engaged to be married to a man named Charles Manville. And the defense said that law enforcement didn't look carefully enough at him as a suspect. They posited that he could have been responsible for her death. And they brought out with their own forensic evidence that Charles Manville's DNA was not tested. They also made the point that shortly after the murder, Manville moved away while Stephen Kuhn stayed in the area and had lived here still. Unfortunately for the defense, Manville has medical and memory issues, so he wasn't able to be called as a witness.
It has been interesting to see more widely how DNA evidence has affected court cases. Here, it's led to a conviction. I've covered stories where it's also led to exonerations. We hear about it in modern day trials as just, you know, evidence of new crimes. How often is it used for this purpose, to go way back into the past and solve something in either direction?
Yeah. Well, I talked with both Captain Chris Clark, who's head of the Grand Traverse County Detectives, and Prosecutor Noel Muggenberg after the verdict. And neither one of them had solved a case or gotten a conviction in a case older than this one. So by Grand Traverse County standards, this one is ancient. Obviously, nationwide and even worldwide, it's used now in criminal convictions. Nuclear, I think, more than mitochondrial DNA. But you may remember the headlines from 2018 when the Golden State Killer out in California, Joseph James DeAngelo Jr., was arrested. Mm-hmm. He was arrested using genetic genealogy, so tracing a family tree using DNA. And I think we already have seen that much more, and I think we will continue to do so.
Wow. Marty, thank you for your reporting.
Thanks, Ed.
Marty Link has been covering the trial that resulted in conviction yesterday of 64-year-old Stephen Gary Kuhn. He was convicted of second-degree murder for the killing of Linda Mateer in 1989. All right, let's check some other stories making news. A new communications tower is coming to Beaver Island. The Boyne Citizen reports that Charlevoix County officials approved the nearly $2.4 million project meant to fill a communications gap on the island. Radio dead zones have hampered communication between dispatchers and first responders. The project is just getting started. It could take up to 2 years to complete. Michigan U.S. Senator Alyssa Slotkin says she is not necessarily running for president in 2028, but she's not ruling it out either. Slotkin, a Democrat, says a political figure from a Midwestern swing state might be appealing to a broad swath of voters across the country who are more interested in problem solving than ideology. Slotkin appeared yesterday in front of the Detroit Economic Club. She has been building a national profile since her election to the Senate in 2024. We've talked about some heavy things today. Let's leave you with something good. Over the weekend, the Charlevoix boys golf team won its first state title ever. That is a big deal at any high school, but maybe even a bigger one in Charlevoix. Last year, the boys golf team was in a serious vehicle crash that injured several players and the coach. Up North Live reports that the coach, Doug Drenth, not only led the golf team to a state championship this year, but coached the boys cross-country team to a division title in the fall, all while still recovering from the crash. That's the Up North Lowdown for this Tuesday, June 9th. I'm Ed Ronco. Thanks for being with us today. Our producer is Austin Rollator, editing by Steve Junker, music by Blue Dot Sessions. Reporting today from Marty Link. Thanks also to Catherine DePaw at the Traverse City Record Eagle. Both of them were covering this trial all last week and the deliberations that stretched through the weekend and into yesterday. You can find the Up North Lowdown on your schedule as a podcast. Look through your favorite podcast app. And if you're listening on the podcast feed, rate us and review us. It helps other people find our work.